Monday felt like the calm before the storm, but when will this trade storm arrive? Welcome to Trading Day, David King and Lee Montagna, to you both, and John Ralph, you have the news of the day.
I certainly have. Ollie Wines' management has denied claims that he was shopped to the Carlton Football Club in the last couple of weeks. Eddie Betts is now a Blue, and all for a future fourth-round pick that the Blues probably wouldn't even have used. And Ben King provides the shock of the morning with a two-year contract extension, the Gold Coast player, through to 2022.
Let's talk about Ollie Wines first. Can you summarise your colleague Sam Edmonds' story in the Herald Sun from this afternoon?
So here's the story as I understand it. Now, he believes that Ollie Wines was shopped to Carlton, which considered it for maybe a day and wondered about whether he and Patrick Cripps would be a midfield dream team. They moved on, had already prioritised those trio of small forwards. Now, his manager, Nick Geeshan from TLA, utterly denies the story today. But all I can say is that sitting next to Sam at the Herald Sun, Sam had multiple sources. Sam worked on this deal for a week, continued to go back to them, and he was absolutely adamant that Carlton believed he was gettable. Now, where that story came from or where the messaging came from to Carlton, I can't tell you, but Carlton believed that if they wanted, for the right price, Ollie Wines could have been gettable.
So this statement was to the Fox Footy website this afternoon. Gentlemen, I can categorically say I never approached Carlton asking their football club to make an approach for Ollie Wines. These reports are completely untrue. He then goes on to say Ollie's very happy at Port. He's a captain and he's contracted for another three seasons.
How does this happen? Seriously. We've had a couple of these occasions. I'm looking at you two. You do this.
Well, I can't speak for Sam Edmund, just like Ralph, you can't speak for me.
How do we get to here? I mean, this is... it's almost laughable what Trade Week has become. It's become about rumour and what could possibly happen. Names get thrown into the air. We're just juggling balls everywhere. Because we're not doing trades, really, I think this is the case. But, Ralphie, how does this happen?
I think we get to here, I don't know about this specific case, but we get to here in general because there are a lot of open conversations that happen. At exit meetings, players want to know where they are, whether it's Ollie Wines or someone else. We get to here because managers want to maximise the deals. And so whether it's an exit meeting or whether it's on a Monday where all these clubs get together, names get thrown open. Now, maybe it's because that Ollie Wines is the co-captain. There is a degree of sensitivity about it. Why are we so serious? These are the kind of things that happens not only in Trade Week but across the landscape. Players' names get thrown up, they get knocked down, sometimes they trade.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Ralphie. I mean, that's player managers' roles, is to just suss out the marketplace. It might not necessarily be the player wants to leave, but their job is just to suss out if there's interest, could they potentially get a better deal at another club, how happy are they? I mean, that's what the players pay managers for. Now, sometimes they probably, those stories might get a little bit elaborate and they sound a bit, you know, shopped around, might have been a bit strong, it might have been a simple, look, would you be interested in Ollie Wines to Carlton if he was considering leaving? Now, I think that's okay because that's really what player managers are there for, to try and get the best interests of the players.
I disagree. Ollie Wines is the client. He's got a three-year deal. He's the co-captain of a football club. It's not the manager's role to start shopping him around.
No.
If he hasn't spoken to Port Adelaide about where he sits, whether he's unhappy with the situation at Port, he's got to have that conversation with his own football club.
But Nick Geeshan's denied that he's shopped him around.
Yeah, well, they've got two different versions of the story, but the manager's role in this is not to shop around and create some uncertainty around the co-captain of a football club. Yeah. That is not his job. That's doing this guy a disservice if that has happened.
I think the disservice is if the leak gets out. I think, as Ralphie said, managers all the time will be just having conversations with other list managers about just sussing out the marketplace is really to get a feel for what's your client worth, what's their value at a club compared to another club.
Deal.
I understand, and this I'm just being a bit more generic rather than specifically being about Ollie Wines, but I think when it becomes a big deal is when the mail gets out, when these conversations get out and become shopped around, and then all of a sudden it does put Ollie Wines in a difficult position.
Always going to get out.
So let's park Ollie Wines in terms of the trade stuff. If I'm him, I'm thinking it's really hard to get a game at Port Adelaide. I am the captain of this football club. Comes back from the shoulder, has to play two in the SANFL. Goes 32 in the first week, has to go again. And then, of course, he breaks his thumb having had two massive games, 34 possessions, 32. Misses those three. And his coach says, no, you're going to have to play in the SANFL. Now, there was a late change. He got back in, stayed in. If you're the captain, surely you only play the one in the SNFL coming back from that shoulder injury. You get your captain in, you say, get behind this bloke, and we're away.
Oh, no, he's still a star. He just had an injury-interrupted year. As you said, he wasn't fully fit. When he has been fit, he's still a very, very important player to that club, and he is their captain. So I've got no issue with him being in their best team round one next year. Absolutely, he will be. So I don't necessarily think that's a concern for Ollie
Wines. So, King, everyone's, no one's untouchable these days. Everyone's got a price.
The managers can talk about whatever players they want, can't they?
Well,
you're saying no because he's co-captain, but...
No, they can, but you've got to accept that this is... Carlton have spoken about this for a day. Listening to John just talk about it, Carlton have spoken about this for a day. So it's a real discussion. It's a genuine discussion. Ollie Wines still has to walk back into the Port Adelaide Football Club as co-captain on a three-year deal and save face and say, come and say, oh, no, we're all friends here. I've got my manager shopping around. That would be news to them that he was unhappy with Port Adelaide.
If he was.
Well, clearly he's had... If this has gone to this level, there's been some sort of conversation between the manager and the player. Otherwise, why are Carlton spending a day dissecting a deal that was never had any chance of coming to fruition?
Let's stick with Port Adelaide, and you've got a scoop of the day relating to one of his star teammates, Ralphie.
Yeah, let's continue the theme. I understand that Melbourne clubs felt for a little while there over the last couple of weeks that Robbie Gray was gettable. He had multiple suitors there. Now, both Port Adelaide and his management today are absolutely adamant he will play there in 2020. Now, some of his contract's been pushed back to 2020. He's a free agent next year. So, again, clubs like Hawthorn thought, how would he operate in our forward line? Now, as of today, his management's angry that the story's haven't been raised. But I think Melbourne clubs, for whatever reason, felt, gee, imagine if we could get Robbie Gray. But he will play there in 2020.
Well, what is interesting, Tommy, is you now think about Port Adelaide. Now, whether these rumours are true or not, but that's now Sam Gray, Robbie Gray, Dougal Howard, Paddy Ryder, Ollie Wines and Sam Powell Pepper that have all been mentioned in trade week. So what is happening at the Power? I mean, even if some of these are not true at all, why are their names being thrown up more than other clubs?
Well, Chad Wingard was thrown up and then became a player who departed last year. They're clearly trying to change the list demographic. So they're bringing these younger kids in. So maybe players who are 30 and 31, not that Ollie's that old, maybe they're thinking, OK, if I can get 3 years somewhere else, that's what I'll do. That's what managers do. If you've got a one-year offer somewhere, you see if you can get 3 elsewhere and you either get that 3 or you might get 2 at your existing club.
Or, yeah, use it as leverage to back at your
club.
The
last we were told is that Port, it's made finals next year or Ken Hinckley's in trouble. Is a team that's gone 9th, 10th, 7th, 10th.
They can't afford to lose those guns.
They can't afford to be losing Ollie Wines or Robbie Gray.
So do you see that the off-field stuff as a distraction or will they play their team in round one and just roll on?
Well, we don't know. The bottom line is we don't know and we're guessing and that's unfortunate. But there's so many
names
from the one club.
And had off-seasons where players have been speculated upon. Is that real or do you just not care because you think it's all the media just...
I think players now have matured. They don't necessarily care as much. It's silly season. The players, the clubs know that. Names will be thrown up. They'll hear things about their teammates. I think players are pretty mature these days that they're not going to have an issue if someone's name was raised because they know it works both ways. Yeah. Clubs are throwing out players' names at the moment, trying to trade them if they can. If they're not wanted, they're still coming back to the football club next season. So I think the players are maturing in this industry that we know there's a lot more speculation than usual, a lot of names being thrown out there, and I think they're all pretty comfortable.
Do you think Robbie Gray will be there at the end of next year? When he's a free agent, do you think he will stay at Port Adelaide?
I hope so. I think he will. Yes, I think Robbie Gray will play his whole career at Port Adelaide. He's one of the greatest ever Port Adelaide players, if not the greatest.
I think it depends what happens next year with Port. If they have a bad year and Ken Hinckley doesn't survive, then...
And they want to rebuild a little
bit. Right, and a team comes to Robbie Gray and says, hey, you can play in a flag, then why? He'd be stupid not to look at it.
And that's why these discussions are had 12 months ahead of time.
Understand that,
because you can get the quality picks.
All right, Carlton, we've spoken about Port, but what about you and your money ball, Charlie?
Well, it was just off the back of the Ollie Wines chat today, even if it was fleeting at Carlton. I just wanted to raise the group here, into you, Kingy. Are Carlton going after the right players? So we know they want small forwards. We know they've got Betts and they're still trying to get Papley and Jack Martin. But I look at their midfield and think, are they one big-bodied mid short of being a top eight team? They rely so heavily on Paddy Cripps in the midfield. We know our Ed Curnow, wonderfully honest, a very good player. Murphy's, you know, on the other side of 30. They've got Dow and Walsh still coming through. But can they get one other big-bodied mid and allow Cripps to play a bit more of that Dangerfield, Martin, Fife role where he can drift forward and be even more damaging than he already is?
Yeah, don't know the answer, but who is that player?
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
They tried for Canelio, didn't they?
They tried for Canelio.
They had the money for him.
I mean, clubs like Brisbane Lions have gone and got Alice Yeoman. The Gold Coast Suns have gone and got Hugh Greenwood. We need Sam Menegola's name still being thrown around. Is there someone that Carlton can just add rather than getting three small forwards? When I think they've already got, you know, Gibbons and DeLuca have come into the club. Zach Fisher and Cunningham provide a little bit as a half forwards. They had to play a lot of their small forwards in the midfield. They played an extra midfielder because they had to help out Cripps in that area.
What they also had to do was play the bloke that they thought was going to be this guy forward, and that was Matthew Kennedy for me.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
You know, we know he had an exceptional game late in 2018, but then by midway through last year, they had to push him forward, or this season they had to push him forward, and he actually kicked some goals. So him and Setterfield, Paddy Dow, another bloke who got pushed onto the flank. I know he's not a big body player. They've got the talent there, but those guys still need to develop.
Do they trust those, or do they try and get one more? Because I think then they're capable of playing finals, absolutely.
I think the game now has become about maximising opportunities for stars. Yep. So you get stars, some structural types, and then role players. So if you're not in either of those categories, what are you? What are you to the football club? So I think Carlton will be saying, maybe the Ollie Wines discussion, it's either get a marquee mid, get a star, so we can put Cripps forward more regularly and be fine in contested ball. But just to get players to come in that have failed at other clubs for mid-range picks, I think it's almost becoming list-clogging immediately.
We have about 52 hours until the end of the trade period, and Tom Papley is still a Sydney Swans player, Ralphie. But was he helped today at all by Lewis Taylor's arrival at the Swans?
Surely not. Surely Sydney doesn't see Lewis Taylor as the saviour. I think he's a really nice player. I think he, you know, he was in the old parlance a crab, and then he found a way to start going forward from the stoppages, and he improved. He did. He has improved vastly as a player over the last three years. But if we think that he's the Papley replacement, I don't think so. What Papley's camp believes is that if Danaher doesn't leave the football club, Essendon, go to Sydney, well, they're not going to be able to get Papley to Carlton.
So they are linked, because that link has been denied vigorously from several points of the industry, hasn't it? But clearly, Papley and Danaher aren't going to be at the Swans next year together. But if one goes, then the other one might come in.
No doubt. And look, Carlton is still optimistic. Carlton still believes that Sydney will relent. But we are 52 hours to go, and not a lot of damage has been.
Why is that the case? Why can Tom Papley still not end up at Carlton if Sydney don't get Joe Danaher? They're completely different players.
I think it's the principle of it all. You know, if we are to secure a player who's contracted, then we probably have to let the contracted player go. But if not, we can stand on our digs and say we were never going to allow contracted players to leave, even though we couldn't get Danaher.
Certainly Carlton feel as if Joe Danaher doesn't get to the Swans, then they're not going to get Papley. Right. And that's the feeling at the Blues. Eddie Betts, speaking of the Blues, the feel-good story of the trade period so far, Kingy, I can see you just bursting with pride about this.
You love this.
A future fourth-round pick, Ralphie. What's wrong with that, Kingy?
That's right.
Oh, mate, Ralphie told us it was going to be pick 47, 48.
And it is, but next year.
Sold us a pup.
Drifted a little bit.
But next year.
Future fourth-rounder, which is what? Pick 72, pick that won't even be used. So it just shows the goodwill on both sides. Spoke to Adelaide on the way in to put the forms in, and they said, we've given Eddie his fairy tale. Ultimate low risk. So the last five Carlton players that have won the goal kicking at the end of the year have all kicked less than 37 goals. So Eddie Becks is a goal kicker. His forward pressure is pretty ordinary. His tackles inside 50 are just okay. Here's the issue for me, and I love it because it's low risk. He hasn't kicked a lot of goals against top eight teams. So in the 10 matches this year against top eight teams, he only kicked 11 goals. In the 11 games against bottom 10 teams, he kicked 26 goals. Only one player, who was the Coleman medalist, of course, in Jeremy Cameron, kicked more goals against Gold Coast, and I still think he's worth the risk.
All right, we're going to talk about the financial situation as well, but let's have a listen to Eddie Betts this afternoon in a Carlton polo for the first time in several years.
This club has always been in my heart, and it's a fairy tale and homecoming as well, if you want to put it that way. I was actually really emotional walking back onto this ground, and I left this here 6 years ago, walking in here, it was really, really emotional. I almost started crying, to be honest. I believe I still can play some good footy. I'm maybe 32, but I believe I've still got a lot to offer. I guess my body's feeling all right, my agility's there, my speed's there. So it'll be exciting, different game plan, different style, and we'll just have to wait and see.
So how much of this salary is being paid by the Crows, Ralphie?
So my understanding is that he's on about $450,000, and about $100,000 of that is from Adelaide. So Adelaide will potentially clear about $2.5 million of cap space. They're going to go to the draft, so they'll bank a couple of that. David, I was wrong. I thought it was pick 48. All the other fundamentals were there. As it turns out, it's a future fourth. So they're not quite the same pick, are they?
Yeah, no, they're not. And my philosophy is the 33-year-old 320 game. And now Eddie's a unique beast. We know that what he brings culturally will be fantastic. He's a role model to those players that want to become Eddie Betts. There's no doubt about that. But philosophically, I'm against the 33-year-old as a selection. He'll be great as an assistant coach, probably second year there, Joey. Hopefully he has a big year. Hopefully he does this a few times. I still think they should put a plaque in that forward pocket at Adelaide Oval. He's kicked so many goals from there. But it is a great story.
Yeah. He said he nearly burst into tears when he walked into the club today, because that was how emotional it was for him. And obviously if they don't get Papley, it becomes a better deal.
Yeah, I think it's a free hit for me, as you said. You're getting a player that's not costing you a lot. It's not costing you a draft pick. If it doesn't work out, well, they've got a favourite son back at the footy club that can hopefully stay involved down the track. Oh, I like it. And with 45 players on the list, I still think there is a place for these older players that have a little bit of footy left, as much as it is some experience and leadership and a little bit around the locker room, and potentially they can still kick some goals. And if not, he has to understand he can play some VFL footy.
And Kane Little in the membership department, they're just sitting back and smoking a cigar over summer. So 64,000 was their record membership this year. They want 75,000. Eddie's going to get it for him in a heartbeat.
How many members will Joe Danaher get to the Swans? Because you both said last week that this deal wouldn't get done. Kingy and I said we thought it would. Have you changed your opinion at all on that over the weekend?
No, still holding out. Still holding out.
Is that more on pride than logical thinking?
No, we've had about three trades done for 7 days.
So you think it's going to get done still?
Well, I think Sydney will come with something. I'm not sure whether it'll be enough to get done, but I think there's another gear.
So Matthew Lloyd reported this morning that 5 and 25 were on the table. That's never going to get done for Danaher. They want 5 and 9, don't they?
The Grinch wouldn't accept that, would he?
Absolutely no way. What about the players being suggested by Sam Landsberg in his article for the Herald Sun yesterday?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I think the captain probably was one of those blokes who was really strong and said, we'd love you to stay here. What Essendon told me yesterday is that just as free agency has meant that players are more readily asking for trades, that they can be denied just as easily. They say, we very much believe that he's a bloke who can fall back in love with this football club, that, you know, that it's not the right time to make a decision on your body when you've battled 11 games in the last 2 years. So, look, I know at times there, clubs have relented, but they very much feel like, no, mate, we're just going to hold it to you to this to your contract, and if we have to match a free agency deal, that's what we'll do.
And I do think if we didn't have compensation for the free agents exiting the club, that they'd trade him this year. Because the compensation's there, the safety blanket of getting a first-round pick at the end of 2020 means that Essendon are prepared to take that risk.
And is it the wrong thing for them to do if it goes to 2020 and for them to match it? Oh, I think that's just what free agency's about. You've got to match a deal.
Yeah, that's what I think, to why I think it won't happen. I think maybe this is the year we see clubs just stamping themselves a little bit, saying, off the back of Tim Callum, we know those circumstances were different, but we can hold on to these players even if they request to leave, and we're still going to get good value out of them.
Restricted free agency if no one actually
matches
the
deal. I think everyone's been talking, haven't they, saying, oh, it's too weighted in the players' advantage. If they choose to leave, they always get their way. I think maybe this could be the year where clubs hold their ground, don't necessarily trade them unless they get what they think is a win. So that's why I think Essendon will hold on to him.
Well, he needs to be fit when he comes back next year for Essendon. I mean, a lot's been thrown at him.
There'll be a lot of pressure on him.
Goes right down. If he doesn't play next year,
he's been told that he doesn't rehab to the best of his ability.
Brendan Goddard said that.
He doesn't train to the best of his ability. He doesn't prepare the way an elite AFL player should. So he's had a fair bit to take on board. Let's see how he handles that.
All right, we're going to talk about the Saints after the break. Brad Hill as well, Ben King, and also a little bit of a four-way trade between a quartet of clubs who are looking to get a deal done this trade period. Stay with us. Welcome back to Trading Day. That's enough from you two. Thanks, Ralphie. Explain to us how the Brad Hill deal gets done.
Well, I still think that the Port Adelaide trade can unlock the Saints' pick. So what would happen here, and this is something that Port Adelaide's interested in, so they would give away 10, Paddy Ryder and Dougal Howard, and they'd get back 12 and 18. So what it would do is it would give the Saints pick 10. Now, I know, they've gone from 6 all the way out to 12, but then the Saints could give 10 and their future first-round pick for Brad Hill. Now, they'd been able to get the Josh Bruce deal done. They'll, of course, move him on, and they get that pick, give that back to Sydney for Zach Jones. But what it means is that Fremantle can save face. They say, OK, we get pick 10 and a future first-rounder for Brad Hill. We're not getting pick 6, but given that St Kilda hasn't played finals for 8 years... that first round of next year on the balance of probability could be within 10. We're getting 10 and 10 or better. That's not a bad deal for Brad Hill.
It's only four worse than what they wanted, though, isn't it?
They wanted six.
Six in a future first round, and now it's 10 in a future first round. So are you saying the Saints would actually accept that?
I think that there's that kind of deal in prospect. There's a million late picks that would go around to equalise it. But I think for Port Adelaide, they're not quite getting 18 for Dougal Howard, but they're getting 25-ish with him when you throw in Ryder and the fact that they go from 10 to 12. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's something that a lot of clubs are considering.
And is there a chance that Blake Akers could be involved in that trade to Freo? I've heard his name mentioned.
No. His management says he's not going. I think St Kilda probably threw it in, but Freo weren't interested in it, and I think he's keen to stay.
There's been a lot of discussion about the worth of Brad Hill, let's be honest. Yep. Peter Bell said he's a first round this year, possible first round next year, and then a third rounder. Do you think that he would accept this deal being 10 and possibly 10, as you said? Do you think that that's a win for Peter Bell personally?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think, you know, he was never going to get 6, a first rounder and a third rounder. So given that they were very happy to give 6 and, say, 24, 10 and 10, and you know what, it's a future pick. You go, St Kilda are going to be no good because they've never been any good or haven't been for the last 8 years. It gives hope for the Freo fans that they can get a really high pick next year as well.
Why wouldn't they demand the lower picks? Why wouldn't they want 12 and 18?
That's because of the academy prospect, the NGA player, that might not be able to get him and also get Brad Hill in. So this makes sense if they can get it done, Peter Bell.
Yeah, and so if you accept 12 and 18, you're not getting any picks within 10. Yeah. And so, again, it's what you believe is the right value, but it's also selling it to your fans.
Yeah, so pick 7 and 10, if Fremantle got, would give them two top 10 picks in this year's draft. Plus, they would probably be able to get this academy player after pick 10 using some late picks and potentially going into deficit. So they might end up getting three sort of top 15 players in this year's draft, which I think would be a win for Fremantle.
Would you do it? So you'd do that if you're Fremantle? You'd sign off on that?
Yep.
You do that?
I think in the end, two first rounders, if they're 10 and 10, I think that's a win for Freo.
We haven't spoken a lot about the Gold Coast Suns, but there's some good news this morning with Ben King re-signing to the end of 2022.
I'm really confident in the young list we're building up the Gold Coast Suns. So to be able to put an extra 2 years on my contract, I'm just excited for what's to come. It's always Gold Coast for me. I said from the start that I was going to wait till the end of the year to make a decision. It's not really on my mind too much playing with Max at the moment. I'm more just thinking about Gold Coast and the exciting opportunity I've got to play for the Suns over the next few years.
Now, the cynical perspective this afternoon was that Robbie D'Orazio, his manager, pulled off an absolute ploy here to re-sign him so that he doesn't feel the pressure next year and that potentially he can still request a trade at the end of 2020. That's the cynical perspective. What do you make of it all?
You're a very cynical man. Yeah.
Not my perspective, just what I've heard.
You can't underplay the fact that he actually has said, I like this club. Yeah. And even speaking to the management of Isaac Rankin today, he said he loves it up there. You know, they all understand they're building something special. What we need to realise is that the third and fourth years of this deal are massive. Some discussion about whether they're $5,000 or $6,000 or $650,000. So it's an extraordinary price rise. I think it just is a down payment on the club's future. It sets the market for him. So if he decides to go next year, he's on $600,000 in 2021. If he decides to stay, he's really well paid. I think it's a massive thing for Gold Coast because we all felt that he was likely to get to St Kilda.
Yeah, I like it. I think the optics are great. It just gives a little bit more confidence to everyone involved, to Noah Anderson and Matty Rowe that might be picks one and two. Okay, Ben King's re-signed. I think it just gives everyone a bit more confidence. And whether it is the cynical approach that they still might want to request a trade, I think the optics look good and I think it's great for their club.
Well, my call tonight, Tommy, was going to be that this, I think, is the first peg in the ground for the rebuild, to be perfectly honest, the refresh. The management get a huge lift out of this. They can now sell this to the families of these young men that have been taken away from home up to the sons that everyone thinks coming home. I know Rankin's a special talent and he's re-signed Ralphie, but he's a small special talent. There's something about tall special talents that just separate clubs. And this is a significant signing. It thwarts what St Kilda were trying to do and look at. And maybe just opens the door to flip it the other way. Now, I'm not saying that happens, but that's what they'll be thinking at the Suns. How do we now then become the aggressor? How do we become the hunters in this next trade
phase? You're talking about
his brother. Yeah, absolutely I am. And that's the logical approach from here. Yep, we've locked one away for a couple of years. Now let's get really aggressive as a football club and become the place to come.
They'll have a mid-first rounder as well as an early pick next year. They might flip a deal with Carlton to get Jack Martin. So not only might they be saying we're interested, they might have an extraordinary haul. And I think...
But the other thing is, let's just say they finish bottom of the ladder that year. They've got the other hook of saying we walk through to the draft. He walks through and we take him pick one.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that's being forgotten in this to get the brothers back together.
And if you've got three midfielders in this draft, because they might trade 15 and 20 for a higher pick, you've got your three star-studded players, you give up pick one for Max King, you're pretty set with both your talls and your smalls.
And what it does, you can go to Lukosius now and say, look, Ben King's, staying.
I've lived together
before. Look, now's your opportunity to really build something. It's just the domino effect starts from here. And hopefully it's a good move for the Gold Coast Suns. Because as an industry, we really want a strong Gold Coast. And this could be the start of it.
Feel good day at the Gold Coast Suns. It feels good to say that. Let's talk about this four-way trade that Josh Gabelich is reporting on the Fox Footy website tonight. So St Kilda and Adelaide and the Sydney Swans got together and said, hey, let's do this. It's actually Adelaide's call in the first place. And the Western Bulldogs, according to the report, said, no, we don't like it. What do you make of it, Joey, at first glance? I mean, all the players shuffle around to where the clubs would want them. And all it does really is it pushes the Bulldogs from pick 13 back to pick 23, but they still get Bruce and they still get Keith.
Yeah, if the report's accurate, and I presume it is, I'm surprised that the Bulldogs haven't agreed to that. Josh, he always gets it right. So they've only gone back 10 spots in the draft, but they get their men, Alex Keith and Josh Bruce. I said earlier in the week that if they get those players, I think they're a premiership contender. So I'm surprised the Western Bulldogs have knocked
them back. They think pick 13 is theirs, and they think they can get Bruce and Keith
another way. Well, unless they've got another way up their sleeve, they think they've got to hurry up, Bruce and Keith.
51 hours.
32 for Bruce. And then they've got 45, 51, 53. You trade that up to 25. That's enough for Keith or whatever it is. I think they can still keep 13 and get the two players.
Are list managers becoming more unreasonable this year?
It just seems
feels like there's more tension in just what were standard.
Well, what's unreasonable? Being strong? I mean, Dodoro's being strong.
Well, not your level of unreasonable, but just this manager unreasonable. Yeah, okay. Just below yours.
Well, we'll get a bit subjective then. That's fine.
And it all does is make a juicy Wednesday night for us.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm enjoying
it's
it.
It's going to happen Wednesday night, is it?
I hope so. Okay.
Do you think how many of them think will happen? How many of these trades do you think will actually happen?
31 players in the Herald Sun today.
I think John Patton might get traded by Wednesday.
The pre-season trade chat, just very quickly, that's not going to happen next year, is it, the pre-season trade period?
No, it's not. I don't think any of the clubs are that interested in it. I felt like if we want to trade players, we'll get them done now. If we want an extra player, we'll do it, you know, through a Sydney Stack type avenue. I think the clubs felt it was just the AFL basically just trying to get another trade period in for more discussion.
Is it coming for 2021? I feel like this is a little softener. No. Hey, be ready for this, but didn't happen this time, but we may look at it next time.
Well, they wanted mid-season and then they wanted pre-season. They got nothing.
I understand mid-season. Yeah. I just don't understand. What's it going to do to the October trade period if we have another one in January or February?
That's what a lot of
the clubs. If you fail in October, you get it done then. So I just reckon you have the one and you get it done.
But then there'll be more of a standoff now and there'll be nothing getting done in October.
Yeah, we'll get Joe Danaher in
February. We'll worry about it there.
Exactly. Imagine Joe Danaher rocking up on the front doorstep in late March or something like that in the pre-season. So will John Patton get done tomorrow, Ralphie?
Imagine if he doesn't. Imagine what King you say to me.
What for? What pick?
47.
48.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. It might be between a third and a fourth round. And we'll see you tomorrow night on trading day. And we'll enjoy your company then.
This has been a Fox Sports production.